Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Broken World by Clayton Smith, narrated by Patrick Lawler. 1. Patrick set the empty pudding container down on the ledge and reached into his back pocket, working hard to ignore the pain from the sword wound in his stomach as he shifted his weight. He pulled out the letter and unfolded it. Gingerly and for the last time. Tears stung his eyes as he moved his fingers over the familiar scrawl. The letters were sharp and uneven, the careful scribble of a child. "My summer vacation," it said across the top. "Isabella Dean, age 6. Patrick wiped a tear from his cheek and blinked hard as he read the words he knew so well. "This summer I will go to Disney World. I am excited. Daddy says I can be a princess like Cinderella. Mommy likes Mulan because she is a good role model, but I like Cinderella. Mommy says magic things happen at Disney World. It is our first vacation. Daddy never went to Disney World, and I never went too. Daddy says our first time will be together, and that makes it special. I am so happy to be going to Disney World." Patrick folded the letter and held it to his lips. He breathed in the musty smell of the worn paper, remembering the scent of baby powder and Annie's lavender lotion. He looked down and saw the last of the redcaps disappearing into the castle. He thought he could hear the rattle of their footfalls on the metal staircase. He clutched the letter tightly in his hands and turned to face the rising sun. A gust of wind blustered up from the east and pushed the yellow fog swirling away. The wan yellow disk appeared on the horizon, bathing the park in its glow. Cinderella's castle sparkled in the light. "We made it, Izzy," he sighed with a smile. "I am so happy to be at Disney World with you." Then he closed his eyes and waited for the end of the world.
"Wait!" a squeaky voice shrieked from the other end of the chamber. A bundle of redcaps burst through the door, trying to squeeze through the opening at once. Three of them got stuck in the doorframe, smashing their limbs together and grunting and swearing as they each tried to push the others loose.
"Wait!"
one of them said again, the one in the middle getting smooshed by bigger, broader men on either side. This time his voice wasn't as shrieky or as urgent. It was a whimper that limped into a heaving gasp for air as he finally slipped out from between his companions and hit the floor on his hands and knees, wheezing and coughing. A fourth redcap barreled in from the hall, plowing over the two oafs in the doorway, and all three of them went tumbling forward, crashing onto the smaller man. Something inside him went crack! Patrick raised an eyebrow, watching the circus unfold across the chamber. Two more red caps came barging through the door. They, too, tripped over the pile of sweaty, squirming bodies and went sprawling across the hardwood.
"This is the saddest thing I've ever seen," Patrick decided with a sigh. Then he remembered the letter in his hand, and he looked down at it with a frown.
A bit of blood from the wound in his stomach had smeared across the page.
"Well," he said quietly, "one of the saddest."
"Wait!" The crushed red cap wheezed again, reaching out with one hand, his fingers scrabbling in Patrick's general direction. His face was darkening through a few dozen shades of purple, until, with an admirably Herculean effort for such a small and injured man, he wrenched himself out of the dog pile and flopped forward on the floor like a bloated fish.
"Don't jump!" he rasped.
The other red caps nodded enthusiastically. "Don't jump," they agreed, as they awkwardly disentangled themselves. Patrick screwed up his face in confusion.
"You think I'm going to jump?"
The short red cap frowned.
"Aren't you?"
he asked. Patrick shrugged.
"To be honest, I hadn't really thought about it," he said, "but it wouldn't be very on brand. I am astonishingly afraid of heights."
He craned his neck and looked out the window down through the swirling green mist at the theme park spread out before him.
It's weird that I'm sitting here, he decided. He pressed his hand to the wound in his belly, and his palm came away wet and red with blood. Do we think blood loss has made me fearless? Oh my God, did I just solve phobias?
An airy lightness spun through his head, and he swayed on the windowsill. Small black dots speckled in over his vision as the whole castle seemed to spin. He tilted backward out the open window, his head and shoulders falling out into empty air. The redcaps rushed forward as Patrick threw out his hands, pushed his palms against the wall on either side of the opening, and pulled himself back into the room.
What a breakthrough! I'm a genius, he said happily, finishing his thought as if he hadn't almost fallen 100 feet to his death.
The short redcap and one of his friends inched forward cautiously, reaching out and taking Patrick gently by either elbow.
Maybe let's come all the way inside, said the small one uneasily, pulling Patrick off the windowsill. Come on. My name's Gary. This is Frank.
You know I want to be called Turbo, Frank hissed.
Gary gave him a look.
Not the time, he hissed back.
Patrick let himself be pulled up to his feet, but as they tried to lead him over toward the bed, he suddenly jerked free of their grasp and stumbled back against the window ledge.
Wait!
He cried, his limbs flailing wildly with a combination of indignation and blood loss.
You tried to kill me 78 times, and don't think I didn't count!
He shrieked, sticking a bloody finger into the air. This threw him off balance further. He tripped over his own foot, his shoulder slamming against the wall.
Why don't you want me to jump? You want to kill me with your own hands?
He closed his eyes. It felt so good to close his eyes.
You killed Bloom, Gary said. I did not kill Bloom,
Patrick sighed, his eyes still closed.
Ben killed Bloom with a...
His mind searched for the right word, but it came up blank. He swung his arm through the air, miming a machete,
with a, you know, a hammer.
Frank raised an eyebrow and looked at Gary.
A hammer?
He mouthed. Gary waved him off.
Whichever one of you killed Bloom, he said. Listen, we owe you.
Patrick opened one eye. The world was swimming, and there were even more redcaps in the room now, 8 or 9 of them in all. Most of them lingering uneasily by the door.
You owe me? He said. Bloom was a bad guy. He was cruel, but he had a plan. And Horace was a nice guy, but weak as hell. And, well, we didn't know what to do.
The other redcaps nodded slowly, looking down in shame. Patrick sighed. His legs felt rubbery as he eased himself back down onto the windowsill once more.
You did terrible things, he said quietly.
He looked down at the blood-soaked letter in his hands.
To innocent people.
We ain't bad, Frank insisted. We're just self-survivalers.
That's not a word, Patrick pointed out.
He began to hear buzzing in his ears. It started out softly, but the volume was increasing rapidly. He closed his eyes again, trying to shut out the sound.
You're not good people. We've done bad things, Gary said cautiously. I know it. But we thought we were doing them for the right reason.
Patrick shook his head. It felt like trying to turn a hot air balloon with a rope. His bulbous skull rocking awkwardly from side to side and bouncing hard on his neck. He opened his mouth to speak, but another dizzy spell took him and he swooned. His head fell back through the window and his arms wheeled in a panic. The foil snack pack lid and Izzy's letter slipped through his fingers and went fluttering out the window into the air above Disney World. Frank, sensing a chance to prove that he was, in fact, good, lurched forward and snatched at the letter as the wind caught it and lifted it beyond the window opening. But he overextended his reach and threw himself off balance just as he slipped into the pool of Patrick's blood. He screamed as he went toppling out the window. The other redcaps gasped in horror. Their faces turned sour as they heard the soft splat of Frank hitting the pavement below. The blood had drained from Patrick's face, and his skin was white and chalky. He stood up, but swayed uneasily on his feet as he looked over his shoulder at the mess of Frank down on the blacktop. "Ben's gonna be so mad at me," he whispered to no one in particular. Then he closed his eyes and fell into darkness. 2. Patrick's head hit the ground with a sickening crack. His eyes flew open and red fireworks exploded across his vision. "Ow!" he cried. "Careful, dang it! Careful!" a voice above him said.
"But he's heavy," a second voice whined.
"He's 50 pounds soaking wet," insisted the first.
"He was, for the first 20 miles, a third voice wheezed. "He's put on a few thousand pounds since then."
The fireworks dissolved, and Patrick squinted against the harsh glare of the sun blazing through shifting layers of yellow-green mist. 6 silhouettes stood over him, inspecting him closely. They encircled his vision like numbers on a clock.
"He's still alive," said the man at position 3, sounding surprised.
"Are you sure?" asked the man at 7. "He looks kind of dead."
11 reached down and snapped his fingers above Patrick's nose. Patrick blinked furiously, trying to squirm away, but his head burst with dull, heavy pain. His neck felt as stiff as iron, and he couldn't really feel most of the parts of his body.
"Stop snapping,"
he fussed.
"He's alive,"
11 confirmed, reaching down with his other hand and snapping with those fingers, too.
"Look, he hates this."
"I hate it,"
Patrick confirmed, his voice thick with sleep and confusion.
"Stop it!"
"Yeah, he's alive," said 11.
"All right, that's enough," said 2, and Patrick recognized the voice as Gary's. "Let's break for camp. Rest your arms. We've got to stop dropping him on his head." The rest of the redcaps shrugged and wandered off, but Gary stayed behind and crouched down at Patrick's side. His stiff red hat blocked out the glare of the sun, and Patrick could see his face pretty clearly beyond the flashing lights of pain shooting across his eyes. He had a dark beard that was cut rough, as if he'd trimmed it with a hunting knife sometimes, and his eyes were dark with deep wells beneath them.
"How you feeling?" Gary asked.
"Like I fell under a dump truck."
Patrick coughed out a ball of phlegm that had formed in his throat, and it almost killed him. His throat felt as hot and dry as brimstone. Pieces of it seemed to flake off with every breath. His skin was warm and clammy with sweat, but cold chills rippled through his bones every few seconds.
"Death sucks,"
he decided. Gary snorted.
"You're not lucky enough to be dead," he said. "You're mostly alive."
Patrick frowned.
"Which parts?"
he asked, honestly confused. He struggled to sit up, and his body revolted. But Gary put a hand under his arm and helped him rise up to an awkward, half-reclining lie-down.
"Where are we? How long was I unconscious? What happened to me?"
"You got stabbed in the gut."
Patrick nodded miserably.
"Yeah, but, like, after that..."
"It caught up with you," Gary said.
"You bled more blood than I thought a body had in it." "I am a walking Tarantino movie,"
Patrick confirmed glumly.
"Or, I guess, a not-walking one."
"You passed out in the castle. I thought you were dead. But Jimmy there..."
Gary nodded toward the red cap who had snapped his fingers at Patrick's face.
"He used to be an EMT before M-Day. He said you were just mostly dead."
"To Blave,"
Patrick whispered. He closed his eyes and chuckled. This brought a shot of pain through his belly, and he winced sharply. Gary screwed up his face, confused.
"Sure," he said dismissively. "So Jimmy, he got in there and did his thing. Stopped the bleeding, cleaned the wound, stitched you up, hoped for the best.
took a few weeks. Shit, I don't know about time anymore, but honestly, I think it's been over a month. Seemed like forever. But here you are.
A month?
Patrick struggled onto one elbow and pulled up the hem of his ratty t-shirt. He frowned as he looked down at the sword wound and the uneven scar to the left of his belly button.
What did he sew me up with?
He demanded, gingerly touching the raised welts where, from the looks of it, a surprisingly thick cord had been used as a suture.
Only thing he could find, Gary said with a frown, his shoelace.
Patrick blenched.
I don't suppose it was a new one,
he said quietly, trying to swallow down against the vomit that was threatening to rise in his throat.
Fresh out of the package from a Disney gift shop?
Fresh off his 8-year-old boot, Gary corrected him. But he washed it first.
With soap?
With rot gut. Patrick pulled down his shirt and let himself collapse back onto the ground.
How am I still alive?
He grumbled.
No sepsis yet, Gary shrugged. Lucky me,
Patrick grunted. He closed his eyes to hide them from the high sun's harsh glare.
Where are we now?
North Carolina. This bit of information tried to penetrate the fog of confusion that surrounded Patrick's understanding of his current predicament. It failed. He did not understand.
North Carolina?
We passed Myrtle Beach about a week ago, so I don't know. Somewhere on the Crystal Coast?
Talk to me like my parents didn't wear sweaters tied around their necks.
Halfway through North Carolina, maybe. On the water. Gary waved out toward the space to his left, and Patrick turned his head. Through the challenging light, he saw a distant ridge of sand, and beyond that, a gray-blue streak. There's the Atlantic. Patrick's head swam. He tried to form words from the complex cloud of injustices that swelled in his mind and in his heart at the thought of being dragged north along the east coast against his will and without his knowledge.
Gary,
he finally managed to say,
my blood sugar is at zero, and this news is making my head spin, and I have to close my eyes for a while.
He laid back and exhaled, giving up the fight against exhaustion.
But I want to be clear that when I wake up, I am going to be very, very angry about being in North Carolina.
He fell asleep and started snoring softly. Gary sighed. He called for a few of the others, and together they lifted Patrick and carried him up the beach. 3.
You hate the beach, Ben said.
I do not hate the beach, and I've never said that, Patrick insisted.
Literally, last week I asked you if you wanted to go to the beach, and you said, no way, never, I hate the beach.
Oh, Patrick blinked. Well, that was last week. This week, I think the beach is fine. He and Ben were sitting at the rooftop bar at the London House Hotel. The skyscrapers of downtown Chicago rippled out around them, proud and gleaming in the summer sunshine. Far below, speedboats puttered along the Chicago River, heading toward the lake, crammed full of tanned bodies in swimsuits.
Why is it when I want to go to the beach, you hate it? But when you want to go to the beach, it's fine,
Ben asked grumpily.
Because why would I want to go to the beach when I don't want to go to the beach?
Patrick countered.
Do you ever hear yourself? You're not making any sense. Sometimes I'm not clear on why we're friends.
Ben drank his $12 beer. It tasted like watery orange peel.
This beer sucks, and it cost my month's rent. Why did we come up here?
I thought you wanted to.
I thought you wanted to.
I'm pretty sure it was you, Patrick insisted.
Why would I want to come up here? I hate being around people.
That's true. Patrick nodded, tapping his chin. But why would I want to be up here? I can't stand heights.
Well, Jesus, Pat, let's get the hell out of here,
Ben grumbled. He choked down the rest of his beer and slammed the empty glass on the table. He stood up and tossed a few bills onto the table. Patrick followed suit, drinking his beer in smaller sips.
it's so hard to keep making it go down my throat,
he said miserably. He abandoned the last couple inches of beer, stuck his own money under the glass, and trotted to catch up to Ben, who had already boarded the elevator.
Slow down! My stomach's all sloshy!
Ben jammed his finger against the button to take them to the lobby.
Do you want to go to the beach or not?
Yes! When I said, let's go to the beach a few minutes ago, I meant that we should go to the beach.
In jeans and t-shirts and tennis shoes.
Yes, sir. I want to stand on the beach, but I don't want to get all sandy and stuff.
I don't think you understand the concept of beach,
Ben pointed out. The elevator opened at the lobby, and they scooted through the lobby and out onto Wacker Drive. Traffic was light, but the tourists were plenty, so they hopped down into the road to avoid the congested sidewalks. A taxi blared its horn at them, and Ben flipped the driver off.
Fuck off! I live here! He yelled.
They ran across Michigan Avenue against the light and nearly got creamed by a tour bus.
You know, I don't think we can actually get to the beach this way,
Patrick realized, looking around.
This is going great, Ben sighed.
So hard to think with a stomach so sloshy,
Patrick frowned. He looked south along Michigan.
Ah, who cares? Let's just go down to Millennium Park and go over to the waterfront.
Who wants sand, anyway? So you don't want a beach.
I always want a beach, Patrick corrected him, but sometimes just the edge of land will do.
You are so weird sometimes.
They hustled along Michigan, then cut through the park, avoiding vacationers on Segway tours and families taking selfies by the bean. They crossed the bridge over the train tracks and came out into a sprawling lawn on the east side of the park.
Actually, let's just stop here, Patrick said.
But the water's like 3 blocks away.
That's okay. I don't need the water.
Then what are we doing this for?
Ben exploded. Patrick flopped down onto the grass, rolling over onto his back and drinking in the sunshine.
I just had to get out of the buildings, he said happily.
Ben frowned. Then he shrugged.
Yeah, fine, he decided.
He sat down next to Patrick and breathed in the smell of the fresh-cut grass.
Sometimes the buildings are the worst part of the city.
Raise them to the ground, I always say. They lay like that for over an hour, chatting away in the fresh air and sunshine until Patrick fell asleep, sprawled out across the grass. 4. Patrick awoke stiff and cranky as he'd promised, with something bumpy and uncomfortable pressing up against his shoulder blades.
Are we on a beach? He asked, annoyed. It's cold. Are we on a beach? I hate a cold beach.
He heaved over onto his side, biting back the pain in his stomach. He checked the wound again. The raised bumps from the shoelace were red and angry-looking, and now they were leaking with some sort of yellowish fluid. The scar from the sword was fine. It was the filthy sutures that were going to kill him. But for now, he had a different pain to deal with.
What is under me? Something hurts under me. I can't turn to look. It hurts. Someone come in here and tell me what's under me.
Gary threw open the flap to Patrick's tent.
What's wrong?
He asked, rubbing the sleep from his eyes.
I slept on something hard and now I'm cranky,
Patrick exclaimed, struggling over onto his side.
I am a patient. I am sickly. And I need absolute perfect rest to allow my glorious corporeal body to heal.
Gary frowned down at the sand.
Your glorious body slept on a dead crab.
He nudged the fossilized crab carcass with his toe and flipped it across the tent.
I was keeping it warm,
Patrick insisted grumpily. He let himself collapse back onto the sand.
This is exactly why I need a tent with a floor. Richie has a tent with a floor. I should have a tent with a floor.
Richie has contact dermatitis, Gary reminded him.
I have contact belly split open,
Patrick countered, narrowing his eyes. And since you're being like this about it, I guess you're feeling better?
I'm not having fever dreams about demon preachers chasing me on buffalo back to put bombs through my hands anymore, if that's what you're asking.
Patrick sighed.
You were having those?
Often, Patrick nodded. His muscles had experienced some level of atrophy since the showdown at Disney World, and his entire body felt like a jumble of slack wires. His head trembled with the strain of moving it up and down.
But they've stopped now, so that's a good sign.
I am still of the very strong opinion that a bootlace belongs on the outside of a person's skin, and my surgical wound seems to agree with me.
The stitches that saved me are going to kill me.
I'll have to cut off half of my midsection and bounce around on my waist like a slinky dog.
You do paint a picture, Gary sighed. Does that mean we can start expecting you to walk on your own now?
I am fully capable of transporting my own weight by means of my own feet, Patrick grumped.
Good. We'll go a lot faster if you could walk a full day, Gary said.
Oh, right. I've been meaning to talk to you about that progress,
Patrick groaned, struggling up to his feet. Gary reached out and pulled him up by the forearm. Patrick nodded his thanks and patted Gary on the shoulder.
Where is it we're progressing to?
His brow wrinkled.
Where is it to where we're progressing?
To where are we progressing to?
Boy, that question is a syntax nightmare.
We're going northeast, Gary said, pulling back the tent flap and cinching it open, letting in a stream of watery green light.
Patrick closed his eyes against the soft glare and waited for his pupils to adjust.
But why?
Are we coastal elites now?
Gary frowned.
I know it hasn't been ideal keeping you on the move. You'd have healed faster if we could have stayed put. But Bloom put us in a bad spot.
His face darkened a few shades, and he lowered his eyes to the sand.
Not just Bloom. The way we were with Bloom. It all put us in a bad spot.
Patrick noticed the worn lines around Gary's eyes and at the corners of his frown. Beneath his stiff red hat, he had gone prematurely gray. Though he wasn't far from Patrick in age, standing there now in the misty morning light, he looked old.
What kind of spot?
Gary raised his eyes. He looked at Patrick as if he'd forgotten he was there. He blinked a few times and cleared away the clouds.
The shit we did, it was bad. You don't know the half of it. We broke a whole lot of people. We broke just about every part of the world we touched. We couldn't stay in Florida. People were looking for us. Angry people. All along the Lincoln Service, and the Texas Eagle, too. Chicago to San Antonio. Then, when we were hunting you guys down, we cut the same kind of path through the South, too. Lots of people looking for us there now. Looking for vengeance. We had to get out of Florida, and we were running out of places to go. After you passed out in the castle, we dragged you to the Palmetto line. We didn't know the conductor or any of the crew, which I guess was lucky. Our uniforms were enough to get us on the train, and we rode you up as far as Charleston. The plan was to go all the way north to New York, then jump a maple leaf into Canada. Rumor is M-Day wasn't so bad up there, in some parts at least. Things might be better with more civilization. That was our plan. But when we got to Charleston, the train swapped out crews, and some of the old boys who came on board, they did know us. Two of them for sure. So we hopped out and ran. We've been running northeast ever since. We're a pretty safe distance from the tracks now.
Patrick swallowed, his own spit hot and insufficient in his dry, dusty throat.
What did you do to the other redcaps, the ones who recognized you? And what did they recognize?
Gary exhaled. This older man, Buck, we crossed his path in Joliet once. He used to have a partner, someone from the old days, someone he'd trained on the Southwest Chief before M-Day. The guy stood between Bloom and a nice-looking widow on the Joliet run.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?